Dr. Koontz, what do you know about red heifers?
Red heifers matter for sacrificial purposes in the Old Testament, but they also matter for sacrificial purposes in Jewish efforts, especially in Israel itself, to at least practice for the reinstitution of temple sacrifices, should a third temple, depending on how you want to reckon these things, a third temple is usually the counting. Should a third temple be built in Jerusalem if and when the Dome of the Rock is destroyed?
And so, could that happen any day?
I don't think that could happen any day, but I think we do have to realize that that is part of state policy and it for Israel, that Israel's state policy is this weird mix at this point of coalition between what are called revisionist Zionists. That's the ideas behind the Likud party. And those folks are mainly still secular Jews. But it's revisionist Zionists allied with religious Zionists, which wasn't even really much of a constituency in the early history of Israel, or even maybe the first 50 years. So the religious Zionists care deeply about the fact that the reason that they are trying to maintain sovereignty over Israel is in order to accomplish certain religious purposes and to reverse the destruction of the two wars that the Jews lost to the Romans in the first century and then in the second century. The first century being when the temple was destroyed. The second century being when they just definitively lost sovereignty and never regained it as a group of people until 1948.
Should Christians care?
Christians should care not because we have a theological stake in it. I think you do have to realize that Jews as a group matter for mission purposes and are, as I think we've talked about, a particularly difficult group to evangelize. And that's what St. Paul's talking about in Romans. For political purposes, they are just another group among the nations of the earth. And we have no particular stake in it. The thing, when I say that, usually the response, especially from older people, is that, well, they're the only democracy in the Middle East, or they're whatever, and if that is something you care about or something you believe, go for it politically, but please assign no special theological attachment to it in the same way that you don't have any particular theological attachment or ideological attachment to Armenia or, Ghana over against Burkina Faso or whatever. Israel is a country that gets covertly theologized even when it's not being overtly theologized, because people will talk about Israel like it's utterly unique and amazing, and it's like it's it's a bunch of people from elsewhere who are trying to establish and keep a country in a place where most people are bound to be hostile to them.
Should Christians care that Muslims care about the Dome of the Rock staying there?
No, because Christians of all people should be capable of understanding that politics is always a limited game about limited things. And the problem with obsessing over how Muslims care about this or Jews care about that is that you're getting sucked into the politically destructive visions of religions who can't tell the difference between heaven and earth. Christians of all people should be able to tell the difference between heaven and earth. Other religions often cannot, on purpose, right? What is the point of Jewish religious practice? It's to ensure the continuation of the Jewish people. It's an essentially ethnic, basically, almost like it would be called a tribal religion if it were in sub-Saharan Africa, because sub-Saharan African religions, traditional religions, have most of the same goals.
It'd be called racism in most Marxist universities.
Well, yeah, that's true too. Yeah, that's true too. But what I mean is that, here's a ritual focused on procreation. Here's a ritual focused on ensuring connection to ancestors. We kind of disdain that, or we look at it as intellectually unserious and certainly not our political problem if it's being done in Burkina Faso. or Ghana. But when it comes to Israel, that's for some reason a different matter. Religiously,
well, that's just it. Yeah, like it becomes our political problem,
right? Yeah,
no matter what we want to do about it,
right? Yeah, religiously, they're not that different, and so politically, I don't feel any compunction to take Judaism more seriously than any other religion that is not Christianity. By the same token, what's the point of Islam? The point of Islam is to institute Islamic governance and to ensure the submission of mankind in all things to the governance of Allah and the revelation of his prophet Muhammad. So if I don't believe that, then I'm not going to, because I am, and this is generally a younger thing. So older generations, I think, are just very often way too, and my generation is, as in many things, kind of probably split between these options. Older generations are way too deferential to Israel for reasons that I think they fail to see are actually theological assertions about the rights of Jews as a people among all peoples of the earth. Younger generations have different programming, generally from the internet, and they're often kind of irrationally hostile to Jews in all things always. That ends up getting people into alliances with like Muslims.
The daftest things are just coming out of this. It really, keep going. I mean, yeah, it is the daftest things.
But the alliances with Muslims, which relies on a different set of unsubstantiated assertions, like Islam is based because it, you know, whatever. It's like, well, please look at the actual, you know, I'm trying to keep this a family show. Sixth commandment deviations in your average Muslim country. Okay. Here's how polygamy actually functions, for example.
Yeah.
But the more basic issue is if I don't need to be allied with the concerns of a group of people whose religious assumptions and, you know, ethnic prerogatives I don't need to care about. By the same token, I don't need to care about what at this point is a vastly majority Muslim population in the case of the Palestinians or their desire. I mean, this would be the same thing. We're just not thinking about it this way. This would be the same thing as if eventually in Utah, you got a lot of practitioners of Santa Muerte, which is kind of a Mexican death religion, particularly popular.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, totally is not.
I get the aesthetic is definitely missing me personally.
It's diabolic. It's the only way to look at it.
Yeah. Santa Muerte, you know, whatever. Is this a revival of Aztec religion? Whatever.
Yes.
Let's just say that somehow they begin to have designs on Temple Square in Salt Lake. And so now you have a conflict between Mormons. And unlike Jews or Muslims, I probably share a lot of genetic material with Mormons. So maybe I should be sympathetic to them. But guess what? For theological reasons, I have no reason to be sympathetic to them.
No.
So if they want to fight over Temple Square, that's their problem.
It is. The drug cartels don't have nuclear weapons yet. They're getting close.
Yeah, I mean, officially Israel doesn't have nuclear weapons either. I don't know what you're talking about.
You know what? I've never looked into it. I just assume based on all the programming I've ever had. Thank you for enlightening me on that.
I mean, unofficially, yes. That's why Iran behaves the way that it does.
Exactly. That's why I assumed it, I guess. Coming from that. So to pull this kind of, I think that Christians do need to care about these issues, not in any of the ways that I completely agree with everything you said about, but in the other sense of, so at what point do we have to at least recognize that these radically sword-based religions have a serious political problem with us that we just have to like not live in ignorance of, right? Like the idea here would be that we're ready for the hate when it comes.
Yeah.
And then maybe we're wise enough to like build the right kind of walls so that the hate doesn't come where we are. Or maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe we move. You know, there have been times like this before.
Okay. I mean, the reason this is difficult in any Western country is that every Western country at this point has significant, and this was the burden of Walt and Mearsheimer's Israel Lobby book. You could do a similar book, and maybe similar books have been done on various Muslim lobbies in Western countries. But the reason this is difficult is that every Western democracy is at this point wide open to whoever wants to fund and say the most in honor of, for the benefit of whatever foreign interests they may have, whether you're talking about Israel, whether you're talking about Palestine, whatever it is that you're talking about, right? And if you have any opposition to caring, that can be because specifically in the issue of Israel or Palestine, if you don't care enough about Israel, you could be denounced as anti-Semitic. So there's a moral control over that. If you don't care about Palestine, you could be denounced as racist or colonialist. So the problem here is the modern combination of openness to influence by money, which is exactly what Plato said was wrong with democracies. They descend into plutocracies, so they are ruled by the rich. That's what plutocracy means. At the same time, you are kind of morally controlled by the need not to say anything reprehensible about any group that is a protected class for some reason. And in this case, it includes both sides of what I think is essentially on either side, eventually a war of extermination between Israelis and Palestinians. So that's why this is, it's difficult to see a resolution to this. If you go back in history, you can find as late as, this was called the Realist School of Foreign Policy, to which Walt and Mearsheimer also belong. But if you go back just to the 90s, right, what is one reason that George H.W. Bush, why did they let Ross Perot even stand? Why didn't they oppose him the way Democrats are opposing the candidacy of RFK Jr.? One reason was
nostalgia for me. That's nostalgia, Dr. Koons.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm kind of nostalgic for it too. You know, and he would now be denounced as a rhino, and in some ways he was. But to this particular point, entangling alliances, Brent Scowcroft in that first Bush administration, they tried to be like, look, the Arabs have some points, and the Bushes have their own reasons for being sympathetic to the Arabs. Plutocracy has been there for a long time, but they have some points. We are not going to choose to come down hard on the Arabs, on especially on the question of Israel. Well, the Israelis got very angry about that. So, and you have similar conflicts in the 40s and 50s, particularly coming out of the State Department, which has never been as pro-Israel as it has been supposed to be. So if all that's true, then being neutral is extremely difficult. And I think the Swiss only get to do it because of...
they're the plutarchs at the very top of the whole thing.
Yeah, right? Maybe.
Where they all live.
Maybe, yeah.
They have their main house somewhere else, and then they all have fun in Switzerland.
But yeah, I mean, being neutral about it is extremely difficult. And one's own country being sucked into it in a variety of ways, maybe including ground troops, probably not, seems almost inevitable because we are not really in control of our own interests in this regard. And I've said this before. I mean, I think that the way this actually works is that America functions as a kind of resource pool for Israel generally. And the political fights that you have in Western Europe, which is not usually, doesn't usually militarily matter in the same way, but in Britain, in France, with much larger Muslim populations by percentage, end up being fairer fights between Jews and Muslims. Whereas in America, the Muslim lobby is nowhere near the size of the Jewish lobby. So the fight resolves itself very differently.
It's resorted to the states, I believe. That's where they're going to do their deeds. I'm talking about Somalis in Minnesota and this kind of thing.
Yeah,
where,
I mean, it,
you know,
right.
The power that they have on the ground is almost more than a congressman is really going to get you in a real way, right? At a higher level. I shouldn't say congressman, but being involved with multiple seats at the Congress right now is going to get you money for your area. But what you need is people who are going to change your area.
Yeah.
And that's across the board. And Muslims are doing that in this country with great effect, to the level where, you know, even the so-called Benedict option, you know, I don't see Christians doing that. And I don't mean doing it like as Christians with some sort of claim on our ethnicity as Christians, whatever Christian nationalism is supposed to mean. But I mean, in the sense of preserving the law and order of the streets, talking to the others who are like, yeah, we don't want this either. And then making sure it doesn't happen in your town, right? That thing, Christians are seeming to me the last to get off the couch right now.
The reason that's so difficult to talk about is because Christians, and I see this anytime I see anybody discuss the term Christian nationalism, and I'm still wondering, where did the term
who made
come
that
from?
Up? That's right. I don't know. It's a trap.
Where did the meme come from? Because it means whatever you need it to mean. I see it in the wild from the absolute most normal leftist who is my leftist cousin's Facebook friend worrying at Easter about Christian nationalism. And then I see it from, edgy acquaintances who are promoting the very thing that my leftist cousin's leftist Facebook friend is worried about, which doesn't sound like something that I can theologically sign on to itself, because the two kingdoms disappear. There's a lot of worry about it from official Christianity, from Christianity Today, through all the denominations.
So much hand-wringing.
And I'm not sure what it means. And it hasn't resulted, as you point out, in anything like the capacity to enforce a no-go zone against, police at any time that Somalis possess.
Nah.
So whatever it is that X or Y or Z Christian nationalist is trying to do or talking about doing on a podcast, or that X or Y or Z leftist or big evangelicalism, talking head is hand-wringing about on a very different podcast, whatever that is, it's not actually resulting in anything like Dearborn, Michigan, which is basically just a result of immigration, not of any kind of specific ideological development that they had to create a movement among Muslims for 20 years.
No, but I find it fascinating that as this plays itself out, monotheism that understands the order of creation is just winning. You can call it accidentally if you want. I'm going to call it natural law, like blowback. It happens. You cut off the stream and it's going to be only a matter of time.
Well, I mean, alignment with a given order of creation, a younger man interacting with an older man, respecting the fact that he's older, anything like that, because orders of creation, and I'm going to be talking about this in Coal Camp, Missouri toward the end of the month. Orders of creation has always been a lot broader than the way that our church specifically uses the term. It's always applied to the way things are set up to function. Even with sin, they still function this way. And that idea means that it is in an ecological sense, if you want to look at human beings as inhabiting an ecosystem that God has set us up to function in, that means that that's the ecologically sustainable way to live. And it's not ecologically sustainable for the younger to try to rule over the elderly, or the elderly to try to maintain rule forever until they die. That's also not really according to the order of creation, because they lose energy and capacity. So that's just an example where anything that aligns with the order of creation is going to be sustainable. That's why you can find, if you live or have been to various parts of the country, you can find, for example, among, native-born American whites who probably have been secularized for generations, you can now find kind of a trad polygamy, right? That you can find it. And the reason you can find it is because those people have no particular attachment to Christianity, and they are going to some kind of pattern that works better than feminism in that case for them, right?
Which, just for the just the record, my point, like, all patterns work better than feminism. Like, that's my point.
Yeah, right. I mean, feminism is not the thing that you're going to find if it's pushing against an order of creation is that it's, even when it's officially ideologically maintained, it's going to be hollow. And when it's hollow, people will at least opt out of it, if not actually also ideologically oppose it. So I don't know and couldn't point you to somebody being like, you know, I know you're a secular modern American, but here's why polygamy is great. I can't find that book for you, but I know people are doing that because they are opting out of feminism. You know, I mean, everything from aesthetics of cottagecore to trad, everything in every realm of life is operating on opting out. Right, you're opting out of a food system, or you're opting out of a certain, you know, cold Airbnb postmodern architectural aesthetic. You're opting out. So, I don't even know that it's particular to being monotheistic. Certain forms of Islam, and Somali Islam is a little bit like this. They're not maybe as monotheistic as they're supposed to be. They have something like worship of saints or visitation of the tombs of saints. I really do think it has more to do with having certain basics covered in a way that the modern American doesn't. And I think generally that comes down to the functioning of the family, whether the family exists, how the family gets perpetuated, etc. So if Somalis fall apart, it will be because they conform to general American, modern American patterns of behavior that will destroy you, because they'll destroy you on an individual, everyday level. I mean, that remains to be seen, right? That remains to be seen, because consumerism sucks us all in. So we'll see what happens.
On the idea of monergism,
yeah,
you know, excuse me, monergism effectively, but on the idea of monotheism and pantheism as seen in, say, the officially Trinitarian Roman Catholic Church, right? And sort of whatever's going on with the Somalis.
Sure.
What I'm pushing at there is that there is a battle between zeitgeists taking place, and that the one that has like a really big God, it just seems to be winning wherever it is. And so that's what I mean when I say monotheistic. And, okay. And so we can debate the terms in class, and you're completely right. But the issue of this really big God, the people who believe in this really big God, they're just taking ground right now.
Yeah.
And again, I'm asking, I'm saying, well, okay, if you don't feel like you're taking ground right now out there in Christianity,
yeah,
who are you worshiping? What are we trying to preserve? Who are we hiding from? You know?
Yeah. 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 What we're trying to preserve is, at this point, the 1990s is my best guess. We're not trying to preserve. And it's easy even for our regnant generation, which is still baby boomers, to be disdainful of the 1950s and dismissive, because that was their parents. And in the 1950s, when they were born, it was their grandparents were in charge.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not dealing with a situation where anyone is actually trying to go back there who is still afraid. And I don't actually favor going back, simply because I don't think it's possible to go back. But and any impulse toward traditional behavior or structure can be derided as trying to go back to a bad time, to a dark time. And the reason to do that is because what you want to conserve is the last time you can remember not being bothered. And that's why I think people are trying to conserve the 90s. Because the conservative impulse, and this is why it is generally politically useless or cowardly, is generally to hold on to the last time you weren't upset by something, and you just want to go back to that time. And then if you are trying to express the fact that you're upset with something, you either come off as sort of unhinged or imbalanced on that particular issue, or conversely, you are attempting to, because you just want to go back, you're attempting to be kind of a one issue person on that question. So how do we get Americans to stop being divided? Well, we got to get the economy jump started. It's like there are forms of dysfunction much, much deeper.
Give me the screens.
Than economic dysfunction. Yeah.
I will rule.
So
no.
So that's where people whose deepest impulses are conservative, which is of course most people in conservative churches, they're not specifically well set up for an unstable situation. They're set up, and this is why I think most people are naturally conservative. They're set up to keep a stable situation going. The force of inertia is enormous in the average human being. Absolutely enormous. The difficulty there is that it depends on what your inertia is. The reason I think Somalis succeed politically at all is because they still have immigrant solidarity and energy. Wait for it to be dissipated. Mm-hmm. It will be dissipated for
That's
some
the
reason.
Gamble.
Yeah,
that's
right.
The gamble on the screen, I think. Really?
Yeah. That is one of the, if you want to maintain the solidarity of your group, you need a fresh supply of people who have zero other identity options. Okay. This is why cults cut off people's sense of identity from the rest of the world. They have to, because it maintains the group's energy for people to have no other options. Hmm. I'm not saying that like in an immigrant group, that's somehow some sort of sinister intentional process. It is the reality. The Missouri Synod was a very different place when we still had significant German immigration, like right after World War II in certain parts of the United States. It was a different place. It's very different if you go anywhere that still has German language services. People are different. Different kinds of people show up. You have a different sense of yourself. Once you have to survive in the general population, which is a prison term that I didn't mean to use, but maybe I did.
Gentile, baby.
If you have to survive in the general population, now you can't just look back and try to conserve stuff, right? Why do whatever generation of immigrants, and it depends on the population and the history of the group, why do they eventually say something like, you know, my parents just don't understand? The reason they don't understand is because your parents never tried to and didn't have to survive in the general group of people. If you do that, now you can't just be conservative because you have to figure out how to adapt and change in a way that is fruitful for the long term, for your goals, for yourself, for your group, whatever. And
pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah. Peace is not found by going backward. Then. And so I want to move us forward so we don't lose some of the crazy excitement. You mentioned the two kingdoms earlier. Not my favorite phrase from Lutheran dogmatics. I understand what we're after and two realms, states. I've been through the loop, so I don't need anyone to write in and, you know, educate me on this. But there is, you talked about this confusion between heaven and earth. I think a much better way of talking about it is right out of Genesis 1, right? It's kind of the same idea a little bit from an Old Testament perspective. And if there's anything that people either confuse or don't think enough about between heaven and earth is the sky. And we got an eclipse coming up here just in a couple of days. And the reason that a red heifer even is a question I ask today is because The Simpsons are one of the most long-running, well-standing, and proven false prophecy shows you can watch. I mean, if they are false prophets, and many of their prophecies come true, and it's quite amazing. I don't know what to make of it. It's all a grand spell. They got an episode called Bonfire of the Manatees, September 11th, 2005, and it seemed that they were looking ahead to this week and just imagining what crazy could happen as they made fun of who they and their whatever elite positions they have as writers believed we were back then. They made some guesses, thought it would be funny. And the thing is, more and more, there's at least a mythology about this. And I'm not the Simpsons buff I once was, that so many of the things, Trump's presidency, just being a good example, that have happened that no one would have ever guessed have come to pass after the Simpsons have shown it to be. What do you make of that? I don't care. I mean, I care what you think, Dr. Coons. I don't care about like how right or wrong the Simpsons are. What I care about is that this is a massive cultural religious trend right now. And it is dovetailing into the eclipse, which is worth talking about because it's bringing out all the crazy. Okay. It's all crawling out. It's yeah. coming out real hard.
Yeah. So one of the popular quasi, I think truly religious, but only comes off as quasi religious notions is that people in the past would be terrified by stuff like solar eclipses because they couldn't or didn't predict them. And if you know anything about ancient history, you know that they couldn't did predict things like this. So the idea that the past was dark and in the present, according to the enlightenment that has been brought by science, we predict things and we observe them in a calm manner. All of that is very important. The significance of an eclipse in creational terms is that the withdrawal of the sun's light, according to God's order, is a preview, like night itself, every 24-hour cycle, of when and how our dependence on his order is entire. It's complete, because these things could go away, because the bodies are actually set up to in some periodic fashion, they are intended to display his control and his power. That's why Paul assumes that knowledge of these things actually should bring knowledge of his existence and of his power over his creation. If the eclipse is then, however, connected to whether you're talking about cartoons meant for adults, which is a phenomenon in and of itself, like graphic novels, we should ponder, right? How did that come to be? It migrated from, you know, it migrated from...
It started as a comic.
What's that?
I think it started as a comic.
Right. Is that cartoons migrate from sheer caricature and what was called the funny papers into being something that we're all supposed to take seriously.
I see.
Right. Is, you know, in that descent into sub-literacy that we talked about last week.
Yeah.
But whether you're talking about the Simpsons or you're talking about the use of a red heifer somehow in connection with astronomical events, you're always dealing with something that is going to be opposed to the gospel, because the gospel is supposed to be the last and final piece of news anybody actually needs. And what happens with all of these other matters, and this is something I'm not sure I ever talked about, and I don't think it's in the commentary, but there's an enormous amount of potential distraction that Jesus mentions about news in his apocalyptic teaching at the end of the three synoptic gospels, where he's like, people are going to look over here. There are going to be these events, right? And it's all spectacular stuff. So what I think is intended by something like The Simpsons is that you are training people not so much to expect something on any given date. False prophecy works precisely because people are lazy and forget things. They don't remember that this didn't pan out. But if you want to use the term predictive programming, I think the point of predictive programming as a cultural tactic is to make certain things thinkable that otherwise would not be thinkable. That's really the role. The dating doesn't matter. The specifics don't matter. The nature of what is discussed doesn't matter. It's the fact that it was brought up at all. That's really what matters. The topic matters, because once the topic is broached, the person's brain will now go to work on the topic.
I mean, think about the fall, temptation and fall, right?
Yeah.
Bringing up the unthinkable.
Right.
Suddenly becomes a virus in the ear. Works on the brain till
right.
Till you go a bit further. So, okay. Heaven and earth coming together in the signs that God has put in the sky.
Yeah.
For us to understand that we depend on him. The extra news recently that may or may not oppose the gospel. It is knowledge at this point, though, about, you know, our government at states levels in the path of this thing, not only preparing for tourism, but also bringing out a state of emergency level of preparations. This, you know, happens. The states have declared emergencies over, you know, gas prices, honestly, in the past.
Yeah, right.
Yep. Speaking of which, petroleum reserves are at the lowest they've ever been, and we're just not going to fill them up right now. Why? I don't know. It's just, that's all news today, too. But some of these pieces of news about states of emergency, they're bringing out significant number of troops, National Guard and right. other. And so this isn't quite a gas prices thing at the same time, right? So what do you make of that in general? And again, my question is, should a Christian care? And my question isn't, should a Christian care in a chat room? My question is, should a Christian care when they see the troops driving by?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So that has to do with the growth of the concept of a state of emergency and then the responsibility of the government to deal with it. And that is really something that has grown and grown and grown since the world wars. And, you know, if we were talking in terms of ancient history, the world wars were yesterday, and a person would easily see all of the effects that they've had on our lives that still continue and that in themselves are still growing. Things planted then are still growing now, one of which is the idea that when you have a giant problem, the government is going to, needs to come do something about it. The last time that we had anything so wild that the government came and did something about it, and that was a novelty in itself, that the government was doing something, was when the Mississippi, especially in the lower Mississippi, just obliterated so much almost 100 years ago now in 1927. Since that time, but that was overseen by Herbert Hoover, who wasn't yet president, who had done a lot of government work in World War I. But especially since World War II, the idea that something would happen and the government wouldn't do something to mitigate it, to offset it, whatever, that idea is essentially foreign to us. This is not a libertarian talking point in any kind of pure way. Because this is not an argument about abstractly how much flood control should a government engage in. It's a talking point about the fact that this is not just about controlling floods. This is every area of life. So if they think the population is going to get worked up about something, they're going to send in the National Guard, which previously wasn't there for such occasions. If they think that something is going to be hard, if rationing is going to be necessary, they're going to send in the National Guard. Rationing can be implemented, in fact. And this is something that you can see occurs despite whatever anyone is supposed to think, simply because you get into situations socially that are so unsustainable that if you don't implement governmental control, especially at the, you know, at the point of a gun, then the society simply will not function. It simply will not function. It will not continue.
New York City.
But I mean, New York City.
You're thinking much worse.
I'm thinking like this happens even when everyone on paper agrees that it's not supposed to work that way. Right. So like the South in the Civil War is set up with the most Jeffersonian, libertarian biased constitution ever in the history of North America. And what does the South immediately start? They have bread riots. They have rationing. They have conscription of essentially every male who isn't absolutely decrepit or a baby. And they have to keep their war effort going. So this can happen regardless of what you think people think. A kind of American exceptionalism I just simply do not believe in for that reason. Is the idea that Americans prize freedom or liberty above all things. Like, I mean, we lived through COVID, so we know it's not true, but it's simply not true. When people get desperate, they don't care about whatever it is that they said they were supposed to care about. They care about eating. They care about being dry. They care about being sheltered. So you can, if you're going to use a state of emergency as a matter of not just absolute necessity, but like state policy, the way it was used for executive declarations federally and on the state level during COVID, but the way that it's used also in quote dictatorships or quote banana republics, which is allegedly not us, all the time to do all sorts of things. You can use states of emergency for anything, because if you create a sense of alarm in the populace about these kinds of basics, you can just do whatever you want, because people who think, who maybe aren't yet starving or infected or unhoused or whatever it is that they're worried about, if they just think they're going to be starving or infected or unhoused, you can do whatever you want, because that's the way human beings are. They go into survival mode, and in survival mode, the general population, which is already biased toward compliance, becomes even more compliant. You know that, and I mean, I don't blame human. It's I'm making
crucify
an observation.
Him is what's in my head right now. Crucify well, him. It's easy to go along when it's your bread.
It's not just that it's easy to go. I don't hold this against anybody.
No, it's normal. Like, it's normal. We are irrational animals in the flesh. What should we expect more of than this?
Yeah.
And especially of those who have no spirit within them, of any religion teaching them, you know, love your neighbor in some way, which some of the liberal kind of skeptic religions still wanted to hold on to that. So things kind of flew for a while.
Well,
but now we're finding religions that just don't have that in their law anymore.
It's
a big difference.
I would say that we also just forget this kind of stuff because it's not heroic. It's just how people live in these kinds of situations. In, let's say, like probably the most persecuted part of the early Christian church by region, if I had to pick, would be North Africa. And the thing that we forget about North Africa is how many people in a given persecution, especially in the cities, would go along with things. You know, the reason that the Donatist Church exists,
right,
is basically because of how many people were traitors, you know, as a literal translation of the Latin there. They did what they were asked to do. And if you forget that that's real, and that's just a general observation about human nature, in the same way that for the purposes of fishing or hunting, you know, I have general observations about rainbow trout or whitetail. And there are trout and there are deer who don't behave that way, but they're so rare it doesn't matter. You know, you don't tie a fly for something you can't predict. You tie it for your average rainbow trout who always behaves this way. So I don't hold that against human nature. I just think if you realize that your government is now set up to operate in a state of emergency,
right.
And that's like needed every time it floods or every time anything happens that the state of emergency is declared.
That's
then
what the news cycle is all about.
Yeah, the news cycle creates this kind of alarm. I mean, anytime there's a rainstorm, this just happened as we record this, there's a rainstorm across much of the central and eastern United States. The news will describe that as under threat of severe weather, 70 million people, right? It's rain.
Hallelujah.
It's springtime, you know, but that creation of alarm and a sense of emergency is intended to govern in a certain way.
Yeah.
Right. There will be a harshness. There will be a radicality to the way that the government operates that you shouldn't be surprised when it happens, because that's what they're trying to do psychologically, because they know all this stuff about human nature too.
Yeah, the plutocrats and the technocrats know exactly what they're doing with the programming. And that's where, you know, for this week, as this event comes near.
Yeah.
I don't think I have to believe that the sun and the moon actually mean anything about the day to know it's going to be a crazier day than normal, right? Like, I don't have to believe that God uses the sun and the moon specifically to tell us things. To just watch human animal behavior right now and know this is a day when nothing could happen and all sorts of crazy could happen, because there's a bunch of people looking for crazy to happen. And that crazy may not be like global wide crazy. It may be just really local crazy and we may never hear about it, but it was you who got hurt. Right. And so this is where, when I see lunar events as well as solar events, I watch the sky because Genesis told me to. And the more that I do and understand what I've been given, what I've been given to understand is that the gravity of these matters is so far beyond us that if you don't see this as a gift from God to receive in awe and wonder with some trepidation, then you're really going to hurt yourself somewhere in life.
Right.
You know, it's not about the sun that day. It's just about how you think, how you see.
Yeah. I think there's an interaction there that is natural between the heavenly bodies as well as what they create on earth, which is the weather.
Yeah.
And mankind.
I think that's an easy case to make.
Yeah, I think that's an easy case to make. And, you know, things that are a little mystifying to me, I understand why they happen, especially because most people spend most of their time every day, and we can't really do anything about it, indoors. And because, you know, I think part of the reason that people need to live in places that have extremely predictable weather, especially sunny weather at this point in history, is not just because it's pleasant. It's also because if you have very limited interaction with nature, it's very important that it that brief interaction be as positive as possible. Right. If you live somewhere with, quote, bad weather, or which includes things that are kind of like not absolutely necessary for the functioning of the temperate zone of the planet, like snow. The reason that you have to be angry about snow and be like, I don't ever want to deal with snow again. Even though you also don't like things that like tropical places produce, like an abundance of varieties of reptiles, is because you need to have that influence be as positive as possible, because most of your life is under unnatural light and it's going to be deeply affected mostly by the fact that you're indoors almost all the time. You know, there you go, right?
Neo in the Matrix, guys. Neo in the Matrix. He's not kidding. If you still think you're on the brief history of powertrain, you know what we're talking about, and you didn't understand what he just said, wake up.
I think that an obsession with the heavenly bodies comes off as odd because we're just generally unacquainted with them, you know? So this is definitely something that's been promoted is the eclipse, whereas it's not promoted to understand weather in your locale. So for example, the National Weather Service has revised the USDA, with the advisement of the National Weather Service, has revised the growing zones essentially everywhere. And if you don't know what those are, go look them up. And, you know, you're talking about a 10 degree average winter low, absolute low temp is your difference between your growing zones, like 4 and 5 or 7 and 8 or whatever. Those have been revised based on weather data from 91 to 2020. Okay. If you actually dig into what that means, it simply means that especially between in seasonal transitions, that the weather will have greater variety or has had greater variety in the past 29 odd years. So that, you know, in February in zone 6, you're going to swing more between very warm and very cold. That's what that means. The way that it's being used is, of course, to create alarm. And I think the creation of alarm is really only possible in people who have no other acquaintance, right? They don't know anything about weather except that it might rain, or they don't know anything about the heavenly bodies except, wow, big light, go away. You know, because of that, it's much easier to handle a population. And I think, you know, you need to remember that the thing that the people who build the Tower of Babel, or their analogs, or their successors in ancient Babylonia, Sumer, Akkad, is that they have a deep connection between control of prediction and religion. The prediction is about the stuff that you need for everyday life. the religion is then a connection between what they've predicted and therefore what you owe the gods and what you owe them by extension. If you yourself acquire knowledge that goes around that sense of prediction, then you are being, in this sense, and I think in a good way, irreligious. And the difficulty that I think we have anytime we open our mouths from the pulpit, you and I, anybody else that occupies a pulpit for a living, is that we are asking people to be irreligious in this way. Okay. Not that I, you know, the pulpit is the place where I'm, you know, being like, do you know about the history of the National Weather Service? But that I'm
three part
asking
series, man. Three part series.
I some people would listen.
I know.
But otherwise things would shrink. But what I'm asking them is, I'm asking you to use a totally different paradigm to understand reality, which is the word of God, which is what I am supposed to do from the pulpit. And that's not the paradigm that you're being provided when you're being alarmed about things, or when you're being told, you know, it's getting hotter and hotter, or it's getting more unpredictable, or look, it's a rainstorm, you know, whatever. Because what doesn't get discussed in the promotion of alarm is that there are, in fact, hard limits to life. That if we have millions of million-dollar homes built on the sides of cliffs in California where it rains, or built in a floodplain, that could just go away. And you just have to accept that about reality. Like, that's just the cost of doing business. Nobody is told that. Everything is subject to modification and to control, right? That's maybe like our chief demon is the concept that we can control everything. Okay. And, you know, I'm asking you to be irreligious concerning that demon.
Yeah. And to see that, again, the phone's place as the modern version of the screen in most people's lives most often, but functioning for me as a television still, what I was introduced to it as, and I still like the phrase TV because it's fast, and I don't know, MTV, all that, but also television, telos, the end of, and vision, sight. It's meant from like end to end, you see, but I can hear it also as the end of you being able to see once you start watching, to recognize that the religious factor is what we're really talking about here. If you are a Christian wise under the kingdom, you will be able to pick up a hammer and realize if it's about to blow up in your face and put it down. And if, or you'll be with Christ and he will have chosen that day. But if you're not with Christ, then these things are like statues that talk, that are taking over the world. And it would be important for you to not act like those who become like them. That would be kind of a key call to repentance for this lunar solar event, 2024, which is 4202 backwards, which could mean nothing. Right? So from there, you know, we have a few more minutes. I can hang around and chat if we want. I really want to emphasize the positive interaction of heaven and earth, because that's what watching the sky has taught me.
Yeah.
I started seeing birds. They brought me down to the trees. I'll start looking at all sorts of stuff. And I started to believe, and, you know, correct me on this, maybe my metaphors go too far, but, you know, nature has neutral spirits. And I don't want to think of them as like a nymph in a tree that I should offer a sacrifice to. That would not be neutral. That'd be evil. All right. But in fact, if I care for the tree, the spirit of the tree will do well. And then the animals around the tree, they will do well. And the place will have a spirit, which I don't have to have a name or something like that. Although many people name their acreage for a reason. You know, it's a lot. It's what God cast you in. And there's lots of things those words mean that could be quite evil, I think, if one misunderstands. But there's a way to believe that every single one of these things is a sign from God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go from there.
Yeah. Well, I think this is one reason that if I have to pick a pagan religion to deal with, I would vastly prefer something that is nature obsessed like Shinto rather than specifically unnatural, like the control exerted by technology on every facet of life, because at least nature obsession admits that there is power in other things other than, you know, the smartest human being in the room and his capacity to control you technologically. So there is something a little bit closer to true in recognizing nature's power rather than acting like if you just do the right thing, you can control all of this, right? Like only our time has invented whatever it is that an Impossible Burger is and promoted that to the general population as healthier than the meat that is created by the interaction between a cow and grass, right? So that's a situation where we in ourselves have departed so far from nature, I mean, we're kind of almost unfathomably gone in that sense. And contact with nature is contact in a positive way. I don't even think this is neutral. In a positive way with the work that we're actually given to do, which is Adam's work, which is a work of wisdom, but also a work of cultivation. That's what Adam was supposed to do. The extension of dominion, I think, relies therefore not just on, you know, knowing things or something, but on direct contact with and respect for the nature that God has actually made, the creation that he has put there, and therefore knowledge of and respect for the way that a rainbow trout is, the way that a white-tailed deer is, the way that the birds are, where you live. If you don't know those things, then I think that's probably the quickest way to get away from the dominance of the screen, because it's going to enable you to come into contact with something that will be in and of itself, I think, the way that an eclipse is, extremely powerful.
There is a power truer than Baron Harkonnen. Listening to a brief history of power, you wouldn't be here if you didn't know where to find us. And that was backwards, not on purpose. Rock on.
What do you think of when you hear the word college? Expensive? Liberal? Woke? Imagine a college that is affordable. A college that is unapologetically conservative and Lutheran. A college that won't take a dime of federal funding. A college that teaches the best of our Western heritage. A college where students grow in the Christian faith instead of leaving it behind. This is Luther Classical College. A college by Lutherans and for Lutherans. Visit our website, lutherclassical.org, subscribe, become a patron, and join the thousands who are making Luther Classical College a reality.
North Idaho is home to beautiful mountains and scenic lakes, small town tranquility, civil freedom, and the faithful Lutheran parish of Blessed Sacrament Lutheran Church, located in Hayden, Idaho, near Coeur d'Alene. Blessed Sacrament Lutheran Church is a proud sponsor of A Brief History of Power. If you like what you hear on Brief History, then you will love Blessed Sacrament, where the Lord's Word is faithfully preached and Christ's body and blood are administered at every divine service. Whether you are visiting Idaho or considering moving to Idaho, wouldn't it be nice? Please join the saints of Blessed Sacrament Lutheran Church for the Mass and Augsburg Academy Bible Study. Directions, service times, and much more information about this confessional liturgical parish may be found at blessedsacramentlutheranchurch.com. Blessed Sacrament Lutheran Church, Historic Christian Orthodoxy, the Evangelical Lutheran Faith in the beautiful Inland Northwest. We'll be right back.